It does get easier. One of the things that gets easier is that we learn to adjust the posture for our particular bodies and what it needs. And I didn't spend any time with that, I admit, in this. I could talk the entire way. You may realize that it's actually, I have to stop myself from talking. I could go on enthusiastically about the Dharma. I've never tried, but I'd like to just go and see how long. I think I could beat Fidel Castro, who's a five-hour speech maker, apparently. Anyway, one of the things is that's really useful in sitting is to put a small something rolled up in the small of the back so that the upper body is more, so that the spine is curved the way it is when we stand, rather than have the tail tucked under and then slumped back, which is nice for the chair to hold us up for a little while, but it isn't really sustainable. And so just the simple thing of sticking your tail as far back in a chair as you can and having a bit of low back support and being more upright is much more doable the way we can stand up and walk around all day, more or less. That's one piece. Another piece is that making yourself sit still, which I didn't address also, but it's useful to know, especially for new people, it's not about sitting still. What happens as the inner landscape becomes more at ease, then the physical tensions release, and then sitting still is more spontaneous, and because we're feeling well, rather than that we're imposing a tight straitjacket onto a body that's full of tensions and squirminess. And so then it's just torture, or you know, mild versions of so. And so if people need to adjust and move, that's, I don't emphasize posture even anything. In weekend retreats about kindness, because you've got to be kind to your body as well. And so it's fine to move and shift positions, sometimes stand up. We simply don't want to have a lot of racketing and ruffling around too much, because some people can get quite quiet. And the way we teach, unless we teach a particular retreat for a certain... Like once a year on Salt Spring, I teach a retreat for people with some experience. So I don't explain posture, and I don't explain some of the foundation teachings because they've already been heard many times over, so it can be a little more in-depth in certain things which go over the head of new people. But unlike any other classes that people teach or any you know things you learn, we don't actually have levels. And so some people have been doing this for 40 years, and some people understand a lot have heard all things many times. Some people it's brand new, and everything in between. And some people have been doing it a long time, and they still have a ton of questions. And some people are getting it really quickly, and they've done their second retreat. It's so different for everybody that it's really hard to cover the bases for everybody. It's fine to... Some people want to get really quiet and they get all fussed about noise, and some people are Asian and they've been practicing in Asia where there is no such thing as quiet. Monasteries have got pneumatic drills and dogs barking and music playing at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we get all very fruffed about hitching around in a seat, you know, in the West. We get a bit precious about it, but some people really like the quiet and they get attached to that. So anyway, how to negotiate the whole thing with everyone in different stages is, you know, thanks for staying here. Hi. Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question. What's your name? Hi, Sheena. Thank you. And thank you for ringing our bells yesterday, Sheena. And I know you're new, right? So welcome. Glad you stayed the weekend. It's good. Yes, I do, and there are things like I was going to do reviewing too, so I'll move on into these couple of things I want to say. How are we doing for time? Perfect. So I'm going to review just the four steps, because then you put them in a context of the Brahmaviharas. When we are not fine, we don't feel settled and steady, and I've been using the word okay, and I'm questioning that word. Anyway, when we aren't settled, then we... individually need reassurance. We need whatever it may be. We need to appreciate ourselves. We need to say, oh, sweetheart, you're upset. We need to count some blessings. We need to be with what we do trust. We need to expand out into nature. Look for good things, not zero in on the things that are troublesome and all the things we did yesterday. So that we need to do that when we're not feeling so well. As we become more well, and these things change and can change really rapidly, it doesn't mean you, the whole person, forever. It just means in the moment. It may be in the week, or maybe in the hour, or this phase of your life, who knows? As we feel more well, we become calmer. And we need to be able to do that and slow down. It's counter the way the world works. It's counter the way the little mind surviving works. We don't generally focus on the good. We mostly focus on the problems. We don't meet each other and tell each other how everything's fine and our teeth are still in and, you know, and our heart's been doing great for all this time. And by the way, my, you know, mother-in-law just fell down the stairs. We focus on the stairs and somebody wrong with the builder. We go to the trouble. We just do that. It's not the way we do it. Just tend to, and to appreciate ourselves. That's not typical either. So it takes training. Calming down, slowing down, being simple, being quiet isn't typical, especially in the modern era. We tend to get speedier and faster and fuller and more stimulated. So that has to be practiced also. Then, as that is possible, we do grow the capacity to tolerate difficult situations without having to move into action and have to fix them. That happens. Those need to happen. And then if the difficult situations that stymie us or bother us, rattle us, we need to go to one again, reassure ourselves, calm ourselves, inspire ourselves, whatever it is, soothe. And we can keep moving through that. In the times that we're fine, however, and there's steadiness, there's some clarity, then we can let the well-being that we know, that we can be aware of, we need to be aware of, peacefulness or steadiness or openness, we need to let that be not personal. We need not to make that me and hang on to it and try and get it or perfect it. We need simply to move in that as a medium and let that be in a shared thing and let that be all around. Be conscious of it being a general state. The true nature state is harmonious, is wholesome. The individual state is anxious or frightened or angry or hurt. That's your story. But who we bigly are, the real true depth of ourselves underneath the waves, as I've been saying, is not yours. It's everyone. It's just life. It's the true life. And so tuning into well-being, wholesome states, free of anxiety states, is not you. It's the big version of you. And so those can't be limited. You can't have it and not let it be someone else's. Whoever that someone else may be you're passing on the street, whoever, even the most abjectly miserable person we're passing on the street, it's their right too. You know, it's their true nature also to be friendly, to be open, to be caring. They may be struggling with their struggles. Doesn't mean to say that well-being isn't theirs. So I'm trying to get to the place of metta and friendliness and the wholesome things. We don't do it. We don't give it. It's way bigger than that. We just get out of the way. Experience is whenever we can tune into that sense of ease, that sense of calm, that sense of open, that sense of care, sense of delight, the wholesome, and let those be everywhere and everyone's. Don't put limits on them. That's what I loved about the way Anālio taught metta and the Buddha teaches it. Making anything personal is diminishing it. And so it's not you doing metta. It's metta doing you, really. Metta undoing you, actually. Metta opening us. And so it's this expansive, shared, mutual thing that radiates when we're aware of it. And when we're aware of it is when we're feeling steady and settled and not beset. When we're beset and struggling, we need to tend to ourselves, which is metta friendliness for ourselves, recognizing I'm upset, so I need some soothing. That's befriending, that's doing something. And then as we become less upset, we find we are bigger than all of that, and we're now in this shared beauty again. So there you go, that's the review. Nourish, calm, accommodate all of it, including difficult, and then let the wholesome be mutual, be shared. Okay, for review? And to sustain, to answer your question, Sheila, almost. how to keep doing. And this is really so important. I mean, I love to teach retreats, I love to teach the Dharma, but it only really works if you practice it, if you live it. It doesn't work in theory. It doesn't even work. I mean, a weekend is a taste, it's fantastic. A retreats are fantastic. They're essential to actually get the hang of things, for it to make sense and put it into some practice and kind of get some experience. It's fantastic. But the real deal for our lives is living this way, is keeping it going. How do you keep it going? That's where it makes all the difference. If you don't keep it going regularly, then you can survive by swimming to one island of a retreat. Thank you. But swimming to the next island of a retreat and then swimming to the next island, you know, gasping en route sort of thing. But to actually be this way, it has to be incorporated. And how do you do that? How can I support that? Especially when I'm a visitor, you know, like I'm not here part of your life. So that's a big question. How do you keep your practice alive? How do you keep going? How do you make this? We need to take time every day to stop doing all the other stuff, all the busy things and the worrisome things and the planning and the left hemisphere activity, the survival activities. Even in a, you know, work week, I think they're too long. Work is easy for me to say. You know, we have these big bills. And just stop doing all that and just be quiet. Be quiet and be present. And when we're present, what we're present with is how we're feeling. Are we feeling rattled? Do we need soothing? We'll realize. Are we feeling not so rattled? And we're feeling peaceful? And that's a shareable thing, right? It's everybody's thing. That's how you do it. But how it's available to you if you just be quiet and stop the other. Don't think of meditation and having a regular practice as another thing on the list of your busy day, because it gets to the bottom of the list very quickly, because the other things seem to be just more something pressing, desperate. I don't know what, but everything else is louder, it seems. Meditation is sort of left at the bottom. It actually shouldn't be on that list. It doesn't even belong on the to-do list. It belongs on the time out from the to-do list, and that's where being is. It's being, being here. So the only thing to keep in your consciousness is how can I be present and aware, mindfully present. When you're present, you know you're present. When you're lost in thoughts, you don't know you're lost in thoughts, you're lost. The knowing part of you is lost in the thinking part of you. That's what we mean by lost in thought. Thinking's happening, but the knower of it isn't. When you're present, you're not lost in thoughts. You can have little thoughts keeping in the background, but your knowingness is present. That's what you mean by mindfulness or present awareness. That's what's required. It's hard to do when you're in the work week and zooming around, and it's not impossible and it gets easier with more practice, but take time to be quiet, to be solitary, to be reflective, to come into the present moment, to be embodied. Take times, take quiet chunks to be able to do that, whenever, however, as often as you can. That's the first thing. And if you don't do it regularly, you'll just forget, it'll just get lost. Second of all, do that with other people every so often as you can. Once a week's fantastic. You don't have to talk about it. It doesn't have to be brilliant. Just hang out with people who are also taking time away from doing and being together. Some people walk together. There used to be a group in Victoria that had a morning, early morning walk the dog, have a cup of coffee time. And they didn't talk, they would walk. So it was walking meditation, because they were walking, being present. But they had dogs, so they did it on Dallas Road. Does that still happen? No, not as far as you know. I think that's a brilliant way, one way of many ways. In the company of others, because when you're in the company of others, you tend to stick to it more. It's harder on our own. The Buddha said we have to do this in company. It's impossible without company. So it's the support of each other somehow. And then supportive people like me, how can I be supportive? You know, because I can rouse you, maybe. That's part of what I do when I come here. Re-inspire, re-explain, you know, keep going together. So utilize teachers, access to talks and things like that. They're useful. Come to Salt Spring. I do make myself available and do talk to a number of students on a regular or irregular basis, or from time to time, it's up to people if they want to, on the telephone, because I live on an island and it's a small one. And so I have numbers of students in different places who we have regular conversations about their practice and how to keep their consciousness going in their day-to-day life. So that's an option. You have my email address, so that's possible. Having talked to some of the people on the council at lunchtime, we were saying every 3 months, four times a year, I'll come to Victoria. We'll put this out on the newsletter and organize this. It's not yet organized. And spend some time, make myself available to students and have conversations about practice, some in a small group perhaps, some in individually, just to be there, to have help people, you know, acknowledge what's happening and how to keep this view going in their lives. So that would be a nice thing. Once a week's an evening sitting group.
Yeah, there's the Sunday night group. I wondered if you want to mention the week long you're doing with Pascal on Samish Island.
Sure. Yeah. So I teach retreats here and there all over the place. This summer, not that much on Salt Spring, just the way it goes. In the middle of March, a couple of months, there's a retreat that's an 8 or 9 days for people who've got some experience. That's the one where it's not open to everybody. People have had to have some retreat experience. Then Pascal, who's been here, some of you have met Pascal, French-Canadian man from Montreal. I'm teaching 8 days or something like that. Just south of here, it's Samish Island that Brock's been to a few times. It's just, if you take the Sydney ferry that goes through to Anacortes, it's just north of Anacortes. So that's the easiest way to get there, is on that ferry. It's a lovely location. It's open, very open, and land that's a little bit up and then surrounded by sea. It's not a complete island that you can drive on and off it, but it's mostly surrounded by the ocean, and it's deep in the bay near Bellingham. So it's a lot of birds and herons and eagles and ducks and space.
Suitable for someone who's not...
Oh, yeah, anybody. Yes, it is. All the retreats we teach are available for most people, just occasionally that one. There's a loving kindness, another wet meta weekend retreat in May, a different teacher on Salt Spring. There's a summer retreat, Pascal and another man, a good friend of his. Great. These are great teachers. I just have such a fondness for them all. In August on Salt Spring, we always have a week long in the first week of August or somewhere like that this year. Anyway, there's plenty of retreats around once you start looking. Once you start Googling, we'll soon change the word from, it'll be inside, it'll be in Google retreats. Joking.
And local activities are on our website.
And that's right. And links, once you go onto one website, you get a link to another website. So once you start using that internet, boy, there's plenty available. Okay. Thanks. Please. I don't know if you'll be interested in it just yet, because it might overwhelm you. It's called Satipatthana, and it's written by, and it's is this the one that you think I was saying? Okay, so it was the PhD thesis of this monk that I've just mentioned several times. And so it's the foundation teaching that the Buddha gave, the most thorough and the only really thorough instructions he gave on meditation. He talked a lot about living and the mind and how the mind and heart work and how to help it. But the actual specifics of meditation detail were this one sutta, and it's very, very thorough. And this monk has gone through that teaching deeply. He's even now learned Tibetan and Chinese so that he can compare the earliest texts to find out what the Buddha actually is most likely to have said, because if it's in three different languages, it probably was the real thing and not added to later. Incredible. I mean, he's such a brilliant scholar. But it's so full of footnotes, and it's so subtle that for a new person, it might put you off, and I would hate you to get put off, so I wouldn't go there first. Wait 25 years. Kidding. Do a little more practice first, I would say, because it just is so thick, and he's such a scholar that I would... It's not a recommendation for a new person. However, there's another book which I recommend for a newer person called Buddhism Without Beliefs. And it's a quick read and lovely read, and I find it really helpful. And that's by a teacher called Stephen Batchelor. That's a lovely one. There's many, but that's a good one. It explains mindfulness, and it refers to Buddhism without it being such a religious... Anyway, he's a great teacher. One and one I like. Okay. So, last few minutes, what I'd like to do, and some of you I know don't like to do this, you don't have to, but a lot of you do like this, and I think it's useful, which is why I often suggest it, is gather together in little groups of four or five people. Sorry, Joan. And in your little, just for a few minutes, like we wanted to talk to each other in the beginning, now I want to talk to each other in the end. And two things I'd like you to talk about, just share briefly with each other. And you've only got, you know, a minute or two to speak each, so don't, it won't, it's just brief. But how was this weekend for you? And what was useful for you? And what you learned, or and so on. And so it's just nice to be able to say it and to share it. And people who haven't done the retreat won't get it. And, you know, they won't appreciate it. And so it's actually nice to share together. And also share with your people what you do to support your practice. You know, and what kinds of things you have found sustaining for you. And, you know, do you have people that you sit with? Is there a sitting group you sit with? Or, you know, what's one of your favorite books? Or some of the things that you do that keep your practice going. Because we need to hear that from each other. Because we need to help each other. Because it's not the way of the world.